I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So Jeff Hurst, the Trevor Brookin and Billy Bones, Paolo Di Canio, West Ham United, more than just a podcast, more than just a podcast.
Good evening, good morning or good afternoon, this is more than just a podcast.
Podcast!
Season 7, episode 16. I am George. I'm here with Sean.
Good evening, good morning, or good afternoon, George. Time just flies by. Episode 16 of season 7 already.
Where it's craziness, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's you know, we don't usually do one on international break, but we've got so much to talk about. Wow. The episodes are racking up this season, aren't they?
They are.
I'm here with John. Hello, John.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Great. And I'm here with Nigel. Hi, Nigel.
We got George.
Where are you? What are you up to?
I'm in my shed.
There you go.
Thanks for that.
Thought I'd slip that in there.
Yeah.
Said the actual silly bishop.
Wee.
Come on.
Sorry, slow that one. We've got a new manager.
Have we?
Oh, it's not Sean, is it?
Yeah, did you know it?
No, who was it?
It is the one and only David Moyes.
Before we say that, though, can I just ask you and John, how was your comedy show last week?
Oh, it was really good, yeah.
Stan White was
really funny.
Yeah, it was very funny, it was really good.
Who was it? You didn't say. We all of our listeners were, you know, on tender hooks. Why you missed our last episode?
It was Richard Herring, Leicester Square podcast from the Leicester Square Theatre.
We're Leicester Burr.
We're Leicester Burr.
Hold up! I thought you said it was funny.
Hey.
Now I've seen him. He baffled me.
No, there you go.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not on your intellectual level anymore.
We'll leave it there, Nigel.
So I'm going to do that the whole episode. I'm going to keep putting that in. We got a new manager. Back to the football. David Moyes. What do you think of that, John?
Not inspired. You know, obviously, we weren't here for the last podcast and we didn't get to debate. But not very inspiring. But, you know, given the circumstances, I'm not surprised. I'm not overly concerned about him because he's sort of a solid type of manager and he sort of could do well. He could go one or two ways. But either way, it's sort of like, just more of the same, isn't it, really? So,
but John, who would you rather add? Like Tony Pulis or something? Who else was there?
There was absolutely no way they would go for Pulis, was there?
No, I can't see.
They would never have made an approach for Pulis,
would they?
No.
I mean, that would be ridiculous. Them going and asking Tony Pulis, him turning them down and going to David Moyes afterwards would never happen. So let's not talk about it.
That could never have happened.
It never happened. No.
I along with lots of other people, were looking for the next level manager. But I think it's all coming home to roost. So I'm not, at even before everyone started to buy into the Brady August orchestrated loving, or the Sullivan orchestrated loving of all the independent media outlets like your Claret and Hughes and the West Ham Ways and all that. Now that you've all independently found that he's not as bad as we all thought he was.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was that bad beforehand. But he's not. If you give me a choice of a manager to inspire me, he wasn't the one.
I was asked to describe or give my thoughts by a friend who laughed at the fact he'd been appointed. And I used two words which were uninspiring and tedious.
There you go.
But on a positive note, George, well, there must be some positives you're looking at this, because I know you'll get behind the manager. Look,
absolutely.
Give me three words that are positive about David Moyes.
I know. I'll definitely be getting behind the manager and
I'll
the team.
Get behind him as well and back him, and yeah, of course.
Fitness has got to be one of them.
Is it a positive? Do we know it's a thing yet? You know, we keep getting fed all this info via, you know, the independent social sites and the actual website that keep telling us that all the players, interview with players, saying how hard they're working them and things.
They are really going for it, aren't they? The actual massively. West Ham.
Another one today.
Yeah.
Another one today. Is he that fit in his 50s, though? Could he put his boots on?
It's all well and good saying it's a positive, but is it until it changes into...
Yeah, let's see a game.
All right.
Yeah, if it comes footballing results, then yeah, it's positive.
Second one, backroom team. Really good management experience. Alan Irvine, Stuart Pearce, Psycho, Chris Woods, Billy Mackay today. The dream team.
Chris Woods was already there, wasn't he?
Now, I mean, Stuart Pearce, manager of Man City, let's not forget, as well as playing 50 times for West Ham.
Well, I looked up a stat for Stuart Pearce at Man City. Yeah.
Go on.
At home in 2007, before Christmas, I think they only scored 10 goals. Yeah. After Christmas, I don't think they got one.
Well, who did he else? He managed Notts County. Notts Forest.
Notts Forest.
Don't
call him Notts Forest. Yeah.
I think that's when they went down, wasn't it?
All right, Alan Irvine.
Again, Sean, you're sitting there saying, is it the dream team? But, you know, none of these names have ever excelled as a manager. But, you know, we all hope and we all think and pray
we
that...
We all hope for the best.
Exactly. Yeah, we want them all to get on well and work well for us, but just you can't start looking at past, because, you know, if we did that, then we'd be very disappointed, I think.
Well, let's just say, right, who was the last backroom team? I bet you can't pronounce most of them. The 70-year-old handball coach who was there, Julian Dix, putting out the cones, and...
Oi.
And the Croatians... Names I can't pronounce.
Edin Terzic.
Who had no experience whatsoever. Yeah.
Edin Terzic. Jurcevic.
Did they manage teams like, you know, was one of them the caretaker manager of Sunderland before he swapped it for West Ham? Was one of them an ex-manager of West Bromwich Albion? Did any of them were caretaker managers for Norwich? No, they were not.
The handball coach actually was a coach at Zagreb for about 10 years.
Was he?
But also, you know, who knew who Marco Silva was before he came in?
His mum.
You know, sort of some people did. But again, you can't start comparing reputations, can you?
No one had heard. Pochettino had been sacked at his job in Spain, Espanyol. They'd sacked him before he went to Southampton. So, and he brought his backroom team in, didn't he? Who were they? Nobody knows. Who cares?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's all what goes on the pitch, isn't it? And the old Stuart Pearce appointment, that's another one of your sort of clever moves by the board trying to placate the fans and bring everyone. You know, he's ex-West Ham, he's Piercy, he's whatever. Oh, great.
Psycho.
It's all good now.
Psycho.
Yeah.
Sean but at least he's got some at least he's got some experience, you know, not only just managing Man City, but also managing the under-21s for 10 years, remember, as well. And our London Olympic GB team. Let's not forget that, John.
How well did they coming in, Mr. Knowledge, how well did they do in the Olympics?
Well, they didn't do very well, because I can't remember them getting into the semi-final.
No, they didn't.
They didn't.
No, there you go.
He was the under-21 manager when Noble was captain, wasn't he? Yeah. Pierce.
He was, yeah.
So,
but don't you think it brings some passion?
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not criticising it, but the way it's all, it's as if it's sort of been well sort of like pieced together for, you know, there was such a, oh no, not Moyes when it was first announced, and it took them, see what shows me that they are so disconnected with the fans is that took them aback. Can you imagine if the Pulis thing was real as well? Could you imagine how
can
that
you
would
imagine
have gone?
That? Yeah.
Could you imagine if they actually have approached Pulis?
Yeah, that would be ridiculous, John.
That would show you even more how detached they are from the fan base.
Yeah. Thank God they didn't do that, though, John.
Yeah, well apparently they
didn't. Sam, though, didn't they?
An intermediate asked Sam and an intermediate gave a quote for £8 million. So I'm not sure they asked Sam, but they asked an intermediate of Sam. And you know who that is.
What, Ian Dow?
No.
No, all right, no.
Who is the intermediate?
His agent.
Curtis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just the board playing there, trying to pretend to be football knowledgeable people, mismanaging this and doing that, and then undermining their managers they get in and causing grief, and then trying to placate the fans again by getting a piercing. That's how I see it.
The mad thing about it is David Moyes is probably the best manager they've ever hired in their whole footballing career, including what with Birmingham City and West Ham. If you look at the managers that they've hired, Barry Fry.
Better than Trevor Francis.
Trevor Francis, Steve Bruce, Alex McLeish, Avram Grant, Sam Allardyce, Slaven Bilic, now David Moyes. That's all their appointments in one go.
Yeah, that's quite a fair comment, I guess.
So when you look at it, none of them have ever won anything.
Moyes got a top four, didn't he?
He got a top four.
He got a few Manager of the Month awards.
Sean would tell you, he's won League Manager Award 3 times. Only Fergie beat that, Sean, isn't it?
4 times, yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, yeah. He won League Manager Association 3 times and the only person to beat is Sir Alex Ferguson. So he must be the second best manager in the Premier League.
Ever.
Of all time.
Yeah.
He's also been well criticised at least twice in the press by Lady Brady.
Yeah, I was going to say that. If you listen to our... Karen Brady, she wasn't too keen on him 10 years ago, whenever it was, when she wrote in her column saying, not sure 65 grand a week for a manager who's won a few Manager of Month awards is justified.
Yeah.
Oh, how times change.
But he could. He's got, right, we said this last week, but I'm going to talk to John and George, right?
Okay.
He admitted he made a mistake. He should never have taken the job at Sunderland. He wasn't allowed his own backroom team. He wasn't given any money. He was given a poisonous chalice. On hindsight, he says, should never have taken it. Many, many managers fail in Spain. And again, he's got where he took it. He was always set up for Manchester United, the chosen one, personally chosen by Sir Alex Ferguson. I don't care who followed Sir Alex Ferguson. It was an ageing team, and whoever came in was going to fail compared to Sir Alex Ferguson. So therefore, you have to go back to his Preston and his Everton days, which he did quite well. Case closed. Thank you very much.
Didn't do too well in Spain, did he? Didn't do too well.
I said no one does well. No English manager does well in Spain.
Well, you know, he's not English, so that's a start.
Oh, oh, you've always got a bloody clever answer.
To pick you apart further, where have we just hired Billy McKinley from?
Sunderland.
And you just said he couldn't take his own backroom staff to Sunderland. How did Billy McKinley get in then?
He was chief scout. He wasn't an assistant manager. He got hired as a chief scout. Huh?
Was he backroom staff? You just said he didn't hire his own backroom staff, but he hired Billy McKinley.
Well, he wasn't allowed to take on his assistant manager and coaches, etc., which is why Billy McKinley became a chief scout instead of anything else.
Oh, look, I guess I think the final point should be, you know, we will all support him and his backroom team, whoever they may be. But, you know, in 10 games' time, let's look at it again and we'll know exactly how well he's done. I mean, everyone's going to back him. Let's see what's going to happen.
But he could well not improve and we could well get relegated.
Absolutely.
But
oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, it could go that way. It's such a mess. It could well go that way. But all he needs to do, really, is to get us 12th, 13th, safe, and he's got a job, hasn't he? And we've got the same. I mean, you've got to throw your mind back to the Everton fans who were glad that Moyes left the place because they were sick of the football he produced. And when all you've got is you're not going to win the league, you might win a cup, but we never tend to anyway. And if all you've got to look forward to is a decent game of football and you know you're not even going to get that, then what is it? What is the point of going every week in, week out and watch like unentertaining football? Because you know you're signing up to it again. Once again, they're signing up to it. Then we're not going to get what, you know, Eddie Howe produces. We're not going to get what even what Brendan Rodgers was producing with Swansea and Liverpool. And we're not going to get that type of play, are we? We're not going to get a Pochettino when he came in, how he started. We know what we're going to get.
Do you know what his deal is? This will surprise you.
What? Go on in.
His financial deal. Do you know what it is, Nigel?
Well, yeah, you told me.
Yeah, but how it breaks down.
It's something like...
Break it down.
Break it down, yeah. For $2 million for 6 months. But he has actually got a 2-year contract. But there's a break clause on both sides, is it?
Yeah, there is. But that I'm not focusing on that. But just focus for the 6 months. He's on a very small basic with a massive bonus. He's on something like 10 grand a week pay, right? So that's only about 250 grand in the time he's here. But he's on a £2 million bonus to keep us up in this division. How much motivation is that?
£2 million worth.
A DS special, that is.
But is he not a millionaire already?
Of course he is.
Right, well, then, you know.
But that is a genius deal to say that he's on next to nothing. I mean, what's 10 grand a week? But he gets a £2 million.
It ain't a genius deal if you still go down. If he goes down and we don't give him £2 million, are the fans going to turn around and go, do you know what, Dave? He's took us down. He's an absolute shit. You're a wanker for appointing him. But that was a good deal only paying him 25 grand a week. We're well happy about that.
10 grand a week. Yeah, I get your point.
We'll just have to wait and see. But it, like, yeah. I say, it's just, it literally is, we know what we're signing up for. Once again, they've just signed up to, it's just not, there's no ambition. And it's just, it just compounds the lack of ambition. You know, their ambition was showed by the signings of last season, our first season in the new stadium. Once again, this season it was compounded by their lack of backing of the manager and undermining him and generating this whatever we ended up with. And now, to solve it all, they bring in David Moyes. So this board is never going to give us something to inspire. I can't see it coming.
Okay.
Well, let's give the man himself a right to reply, Sean. For the first time.
Okay, the news.
For the first time ever. Over to you, Sean.
Okay, the news. That's here with the gaffer to see. That's not Scottish, is it?
When I heard there was a chance and an opportunity, it's always been something I've liked. I like West Ham, and hopefully it proves to be a good period.
I imagine it's been a whirlwind few hours for you. Just tell us what it's been like being David Moyes for the past day or so.
Well, I've been away a bit. I've been away doing some television work abroad, and actually when I got the phone call, I was thrilled to have it. So just getting back, from there and then coming down to London. And I'm really just looking forward to getting started, because I know that we're in the season now. You know, we have to get up and running right away and get the job done and get everything going. So we're without some players at the moment away in international duty, but hopefully we'll get to work with the players who are here.
You've been linked to many jobs recently and even managing your own country potentially, but why was West Ham the right club for you?
West Ham's a big club. Wherever you go, West Ham's known. And for me, I've been really fortunate that I've managed some really good clubs, and I had some great opportunities where I could have gone to. But I wanted a job which I felt as if I could get a real good chance. I want a big fan base, I want a big club, and West Ham fitted all the bill.
You have, of course, come up against West Ham many times in your managerial career. What do you know about West Ham? What is your impression of the club?
Well, the passion. You know, we used to go to Upton Park a lot. I used to take my teams there. But also used to go and watch some games down here as well. And you know, the East End of London's always been a rough, tough part of, but also the crowd were like that as well. So if we can get the passion, we get the supporters with us. And how do you do that? Well, you do that by getting a successful team, and you get good players and players playing well. So that's what we've got to try and do.
You obviously haven't had the chance to meet the players yet.
No.
But what are your thoughts on the squad you are inherited and the challenge that lays ahead of you?
I think we've got a good squad. And I think that the squad at the moment should be in a better position than they are. And I believe they will become the end of the season. I've got no doubts about that. But ultimately, we have to show it on the pitch. And we have to start in a fortnight's time against Watford. So let's hope that we can get ourselves ready for that.
You talk about starting against Watford. You've got around just under 2 weeks to prepare the squad. You've also mentioned there's a few players away. But in a way, is it good that you don't have a game this weekend? You've got a bit longer to work with them on the training pitches.
Yeah, it's better. Because more importantly, just to sort of get myself settled in, get to know how things work. But I'll have a chance to work with the players who are here and get to know them. And the big thing is that we get the players back from international duty fit, ready to go, and understanding that, you know, there's big games here and we need them ready to play.
What can West Ham supporters expect to see from a West Ham team under your leadership?
Well, I hope you're going to see one which is really organised, disciplined. But I've always only ever wanted to be involved with attacking, entertaining football. But that comes from also making sure that you're not stupid defensively. So I hope that we're able to manage them all. Some of our clubs have been able to do it, some others we've not been. But I feel really confident with the group of players we've got here that we can make it work.
Of course, you won't be doing this alone. You'll be bringing in your own coaching and backroom team. Mm. Firstly, how important is it to get those appointments right?
Well, there's room to bring some people in. So I want to bring in people who I know how I work, trust them. And because of us needing to hit the ground running, we need to start getting results very quickly. I want people who can do that. But I've also got a couple of coaches in mind which I hope to be able to maybe confirm later on, maybe by the end of the week or certainly by next week, whether they'll be joining us also.
Your record in the Premier League kind of compares to anyone. You've achieved some really impressive things. But do you come here with a bit of a point to prove as well?
Yeah, I think I do. Yeah, I think I've managed five clubs in my time. I started at Preston. I went to Everton. Everybody knows it's well documented about my period at Manchester United. I done some which I really wanted to do, which was go abroad and work in Spain, and I done that. And it's only been my last job where I feel as if, you know, it wasn't a good move, and I didn't enjoy it, and it didn't work out well. So I'm hungry to make sure I get things right. Any football manager wants to win, and that's what I want to do. I want to win, and I want to make sure that, for me, the supporters, everybody, that we enjoy our Saturday nights because we're winning games.
How important can those be, the ones, the more negative experiences that you kind of alluded to then, how important can they be in shaping what you do here at West Ham?
Well, I don't know any manager who's not going to go through negative periods in their career, and I think even more so now. So I hope that it gives me great strength, great understanding of what's needed, what's required. I've been really fortunate to see the best and what it looks like at the top. And that's what I'm aiming. I'm aiming to get back to the top with the team and with myself personally.
You obviously come here wanting long-term success, but what can you and the team achieve between now and the end of the season?
Well, that's the focus, is between now and the end of the season. know, the first thing is to make sure that we show how well we can play and what we can do. And if we do that, I'm sure we'll not be anywhere near the bottom end of the table where we are just now. So we have to focus on winning the next game is always the most important game. But I do believe come the end of the season, we'll be in a much stronger position than we are just now.
What do you think of that, John?
I don't know. I couldn't understand it. It was foreign language. I don't know. I obviously haven't heard it. I don't know what was coming. But Sean, you need to pick up your game on that.
I need to perfect a Scottish accent because that was rubbish.
That was pretty poor.
Number four on our running order. Advice to the board.
let me, I'll give it.
What are we saying? What are we saying here, Sean? What do you want us to say?
Well, I wrote an article, right? Because, as you know, I'm neutral and balanced in all these things. So I wrote an article of my personal advice to the ball, which I'd like to discuss. So number one was that David Sullivan should refrain from giving interviews and speaking to the press for the remainder of the season. Number two, David Gold should come off Twitter. Number three, Cameron Brady should give up a football diary in the Sun newspaper. Number four, the ball should publicly admit to fans that some statements about the stadium, reaching the next level and Champions League football within 7 years were overly ambitious.
And lies.
Yeah. What are we up to? Number five, the board should let the manager do the talking and allow him to do his job without any interference. And finally, number six, appoint a West Ham fan to the board as a non-executive director to champion supporters' causes. That's a good list, isn't it, boys?
Fantastic. Who do you think would want to do that job, though?
Well, Nigel would. Nigel's already... Actually, Ian Dale also emailed me to put himself forward. Nigel's already put himself forward. I think a few people would want to do that, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't think I put myself forward, did I? I don't actually said... What I said was, will they take someone off the WISA committee then to do it?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Well,
no,
assuming they listen to they my advice because of the next day, Cameron Brady wrote that article, which brings us on to the next link. Well, first of all, I know John. When I first did this, he had a few more to add. What were your additions to the six pieces of advice I gave?
I can't remember. I think it was Nigel, and it said stop talking to the independent media outlets of West Ham United.
People like you, problem, basically, Sean. I think was what I said. Are they going to stop talking to you, an ex-WH employee? Are they? No, they're not.
You assume that people like that talk to us. I would never reveal any sources that we may or may not have in the club. I think
hypothetically speaking, then.
A libelous thing to say.
Hypothetically speaking, then. Yeah. If they did happen to talk to people like that promote their bullshit without them having to go to the main press, would you say, yes, they should stop talking to those people? Of course not, because you'd have nothing to write.
I think that's an outrageous thing to say.
I mean, it ain't going to happen, is it? He's not going to stop giving interviews and talking to the press. She ain't going to give
but
up.
Let's just go, right? Number one.
Yeah, they won't let the manager do the talking, and they won't appoint a West Ham fan or board of non-executive. So basically, I'd like to think you took more than an hour to come up with him. But unfortunately, you wasted your time.
But you know what? David Sullivan was doing well up to when he talked to the Sun and called Moyes' appointment a gamble.
No, he weren't, because he was still talking. When he don't talk to the press, yeah, he's still talking to other people who put it out and label it as a senior source or another source, or it's the son of Sullivan's have told someone or whoever. Oh, you know,
it's an outrageous
thing. It was absolutely ridiculous this last week, the way everybody aligned and started putting out the same message.
Yeah.
It was
the panic started
ridiculous.
After that poll. What poll was that? Who run that poll when the panic set in, eh? You!
I don't know.
Who run a poll where more people vote for Moyes than Bilic and they're about to pull the trigger and all of a sudden it was panic stations. Whoa, hold up, Operation Moyes. We need to start it going.
It was ridiculous, honestly, from every independent, from your lot, Sean, your West Ham ways, your sex and drugs and them lot, everybody was proud and stout. It was ridiculous. And how anyone can really believe now that there's an independent message coming from anywhere.
Coincidence?
No, not coincidence. It will be even less of a coincidence at the next bloggers meeting when you all get chained around the ground again, given a free lunch and then told what to put. You know, it's ridiculous, Sean.
This moves on. Is the tide turning? Because you'll
can
be aware
add,
that
can
the
I
Daily
just add
Mail.
Another go on, advice. You can have one. Don't take part in The Apprentice anymore. I think that'd be a good one.
What do you think that does a harm then? In
oh, I just used to like The Apprentice, and now I can't watch it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've not watched it since.
It's put you off.
Yeah, but you she's also then lines herself up by saying, I got given these free beers or something on Twitter.
That's funny.
This wasn't what I was promised. Well, what does she expect to get back from that? She got absolutely
that's a good reason to keep her on, because when I read them tweets, when you read the comments after, it does really make you laugh can come up with.
But did she really come up with, did she put, because I don't read what she does, but I just see the replies. Did she really put out there this Saturday that West Ham have invested more money than any club out of the top six in the last...
She did, yeah.
She actually said that, did she?
It was done.
Yeah. She said, we've invested 100 million. That figure wasn't right, and I'm going to tell you a bit about that later, but it was that figure was wrong, and lots of other people have done it. It was a bit misguided. She's got to fill a column like anyone else, you know?
Hold up, but this weren't a column because I got the Sun today. My uncle brought it round to me because he brings me all the West Ham press every week.
Yeah.
So he brought it round to me. So I was expecting it to be in a column and it wasn't. It was a two-page spread in the sports pages. So it weren't a usual crap column where it was on Monday she was out with some chairman of a club. Tuesday she was sacking people at some job. Wednesday I had lunch with my daughter at some glitzy show. It was... Oh, he was such a nice man. We didn't really want to sack him, but he had to go, and I'm sure the fans understand. Bullshit.
It was... Look, I won't defend her, right? I think it was an error of judgment to write that piece. I don't think she thought about what the backlash or didn't care.
I don't think she cares.
It was an error of judgment, and I do think, and this is why I wrote the advice, I think there is a conflict of interest to be a football diary columnist in the Sun and be a chairman or a vice chairman of West Ham United.
I generally don't think she cares. I really just, she is business and that is it. I think it surprises them. I think it surprises all of them, the amount of sort of like furore that happens when they do these things and the backlash they get. I think they get surprised by they don't realise. They're so disconnected with the fan, they don't realise half the time when they throw this stuff out there, what's coming their way.
And I also think that David Gold should come off Twitter for his own health. You know, he's an 80-year-old chairman who tries his best on Twitter, but he gets trolled mercilessly. And I know that it does affect him. He reads most of these, believe it or not.
Does he?
And he does, yeah. Well, and it really
I'll
does affect
game
him.
Up, then.
Well, I think you should be ashamed of yourself, Nigel, because, you know, I think from what I hear, right, David does get personally infected, and for people to say such vile things, I don't care how thick-skinned you are, in the end, if people are writing vile things about you, it affects you in some way.
Yeah, I don't agree with the vile stuff.
And I think he should be off. I think it's too personal, and I think he should be off Twitter because I don't think it serves any purpose anymore.
Well, that goes with anyone in the public eye who puts herself out there, and there are idiots that get personal and vile, but there are also people that can say things with quite a bit of wit and make a point, you know. So you don't have to.
Do you see any purpose of him staying on Twitter? As our chairman, would you like him to stay on Twitter?
I never saw it. I always thought it was a surprise he was there in the first place, yeah. I mean, none of them do. Brady, what I mean, Brady just cannot keep out the public eye. She wants to be something, I don't know, I can't see her being the chairman for much longer. She's either going in politics or going in television or whatever.
Yeah. Reason. But she doesn't talk about West Hamwich very much on her Twitter or give interviews anymore. I know she did the Premier League show about 6-9 months ago, but it's very rare she talks about West Ham in the public eye anymore.
The reason I give Gold stick on Twitter, and I'll admit I have given him a lot of stick over the years, is primarily to try and get him off of Twitter because he shouldn't be there. And I try and highlight the stupid things that he says. And also, if he wants to be public, let's talk about, instead of retweeting about where we can get his book and it's Johnny's birthday and little Sam had his first game at the bowling, let's talk about the serious stuff. If you're going to be there and do it, let's do it properly then. But he won't, will he? Well, sometimes he has engaged with me. But then...
Did you hear what... I mean, obviously, I know Phil Parks is one of your big heroes. Did you hear what Phil Parks had to say?
Yes, yeah. Well, paraphrasing, told him to shut up, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't hear what he said.
Well, he just basically said... We need more...
People slag off the Kearns and whatever. But that's how a football... Funny enough, that's how a football club should be run. I'm not saying run it the way the Kearns and the way they spent the money is right or whatever, but basically, you never see them give an interview. They're down there on a wall at the end of the season, and that's really the only time you heard of them. You didn't know what they sounded like.
Yeah.
They made sure the money was given to the manager to buy the players he wanted. And then, if they didn't, make sure the money was available, they took the stick from the fans. The funny thing is, if you look back in history now, every owner of West Ham's been slaughtered. Virtually every owner of West Ham's been slaughtered. At no point...
But the old Icelandics weren't getting slaughtered until they went tits up, though.
No, but they took the whole country down with them. I mean, if ever there was the second richest man in Iceland, and bearing in mind his son was the richest man... buys West Ham, and in a year and a half, he goes bankrupt. What's the odds?
So it's just, yeah, absolutely. It's just unbelievable.
But
hang on a minute. They were, if you looked into it, they were being taken for a ride. They were paying too much money. It was maybe...
Hold up,
they were
paying the money. But, they never turned around and said...
But they were making the...
Oh, we're loaning it, we're doing this, we're doing that. They never said that, did they? They were paying the money.
They went about it the same similar way that City started, Sean. They were paying out the big money, paying the big wages, and then having to do that to get people in. Who knows where that would ended up with them in charge?
And loaning out and then money, and then selling out loaning out or borrowing against two seasons of season tickets.
No, but didn't they only do that once after XL Airlines went bust? And they realised the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, they were going
to
tits up.
Through done that deal to keep the club afloat.
If we'd have been still owned by like that, what was his name? Gylfason or whatever.
Yeah, something like
Magnus.
If we'd have still been owned by him, who knows? So everyone gives them grief, but they just were just a, like I said, took a country down.
To finish off this segment, I'm going to ask a question, which I know the answer from you lot, but there does seem to be a bit of a culture change at the moment. Daily Mail, Oliver Holt has written a damning article talking about mismanagement, which has been running KUMB today. The Times did one over the weekend. Richard Keys in his own blog has put the boot in. So my question is, the tide fan turning? Because suddenly
is the fan tide
there
turning?
To be a change. Yeah, against the board.
In what are you asking? If what do you mean? The press or fans? Because I don't feel like the...
No, I'm talking about fans themselves. That you know, there's always been a minority like John and Nigel that have been anti-bald, right? From day one, they never wanted Sullivan and Gold in there in the begin with. But they've been about, I would call them a 25% minority, right? There's a 50% that actually care one way or the other. And there's a 25% that are pro-bald. Is the anti... bald and get out of our club group growing out of disillusionment with the stadium, disillusionment of the appointment of the manager in David Moyes, and disillusion about promise of next level football? That's
I don't
the question
think
I'm
it's
asking.
A new thing. I think pretty much since, well, sort of halfway through last season and the issues we were having at the stadium, I think that was when the tide started turning. I don't think it's a new thing. I think maybe the wider fan group that don't attend the games, and you know, they're only present and loud on social media and online, maybe. But I think if you spoke to a lot of West Ham fans, I know certainly the majority that I know that go to games, they haven't been happy with the board for a long time.
John?
Well, I just see how I think everyone's sort of like starting to realise that they talk the talk, but just don't walk the walk. And I think people went in hope when they went to the new stadium. They thought it was going to be like the glossy video and everything. And then the realisation of the, you know, the zip ties holding the scaffolding together on concrete blocks is these images stick with people, and they realise that they've been fed a load of bullshit, really. And when you then get the actual mismanagement of the stuff that's going on the pitch... Because no matter what you say about Bilic, the way he was treated, the way he was undermined so often, the running down of his contract and all this sort of stuff in the public eye, it was atrocious. And it's just not the way. It's not a dignified way to deal with people. And that's what that Times article, was it Oliver Conn, was it, or whatever his name was? The actual Times article was spot on. It was so well written. And now if people like him are starting to catch on to it, yeah, I think they're starting to be seen for what they are.
But my view, and you can shout me down, is, as I said, you've got
shut up.
You're 25% anti-bald, 25% pro-bald, and 50% in the middle. My question is that 50% in the middle starting to go the other way? Because I still believe, and I know you've always told me, oh, Sean, there's a lot more people that don't like this ball and you'll wake up one day and find out you're on the wrong side of the fence. But I just don't really think, you know, there's a vocal element on social media, don't get me wrong, right, that don't like the board. I get that. There's a vocal element that still remain pro-board. But is this, if you take the 50-plus thousand that go every week, do you think the majority now don't back the board? That's my question, really, the majority. I don't think we are at that stage, but I'd like to know your, Nigel. You haven't spoken on this subject.
There's a reason for that. I do think the tide has turned. You know, you talk about the people in the crowd. Let's go to the social media people. You run a poll, more people vote Bilic than Moyes. They panic. They've took notice of social media. Yet when poll after poll, where like you get 3,000-5,000 people vote on Twitter polls, on do you want bald in or out, and they're coming back at 90% bald out. That's got to be looked at. Now, I get what you're saying about the people in the stadium perhaps being a bit different. I can only talk about the social crowd I mix with, which unbelievably does include you.
yeah.
And the vast majority are balled out. Want them gone. They see the bald for destroying a way of life of watching football and will never forgive them for that. Now, I'm in that bracket. Perhaps it's at the age group as well, where a lot of the people I know have been going 30, 40 years. So, yeah, I want them out. And people go, who do you want? I couldn't give a monkeys who comes on because they've destroyed that way of life. So Pol Pot could buy the club. As long as he's got money to put into it, I don't care. I just want him gone now.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, but look, the way I see it is, there's a bad atmosphere around the club. They've done one thing to nullify it, I suppose, in appointing Moyes and getting rid of Bilic. Because, I defended Bilic to the hilt, and I will do the same with Moyes when push comes to shove because he's a manager. But the fans are turned against Bilic. That was pretty obvious. So the only change could be made was Bilic. Now, the fans ain't going to be on Moyes' back. I tell you whose back they will be on, though. They'll be on Sullivan and Gold's back and Brady. So, actually, Bilic was taking a bit of slack, a bit of the heat for them. Now they've done something about that, they're going to find it's going to get hotter for them before it gets hotter for David Moyes. Because if Moyes fails, they won't go after Moyes. They'll go after them.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to remind you of a poll, the London Stadium poll we did last March on West Ham fly dying Clarence Hugh, among others. And I think Wissa helped with it as well. So we asked the question, do you think the board is doing a good job? And so this is March 2017. 6,500, I think, took part. 5% said excellent. 27% said good. 40% said average. 28% said poor. Now, we'll be running that again next year in, the same time, February or March. It will be interesting on how in 12 months opinions have changed. Because, you know, if you add them up, 68% thought the West Ham were doing an average it's more than that, isn't it? So 68% say they're doing an average or poor job. But you can look at it the other way and say, you know, over 70% say they're doing an average, good or excellent job. So it's the way, as I say, it's that middle ground that.
Right. Well, what way do you think it'll go then? Let's take that.
I think it all matters what happens on the pitch, if I'm honest with you. And if Moyes wins the next 10 games, yeah, I think if Moyes does a brilliant job, people will say, singing the ball's praises, saying they're bloody geniuses in bringing in David Moyes.
Do you think, even if we're sitting there watching exactly the same stuff that Allardyce gave us week in, week out, and what do you think, everyone, even though we're getting the results now and we're settling into mid-table, we're not going to win anything, we're out of all the cups, we're out of this, we're doing whatever, we might finish 12th or 13th. Everyone's going to think,
you'd have to win a lot of games, you know, and that's taken some big scalps. And maybe, right, here's an example. So under Moyes, we'll win the FA Cup. I think the board's bloody genius. If we won the FA Cup waiting this long and David Moyes wins us the FA Cup, I think, and this is how fickle fans can be, right? You can all talk about mismanagement and the amount of money they've invested and the London Stadium and everything else. Deliver an FA Cup and, like, oh my God, they're geniuses.
As if by magic.
I disagree. I don't think they will be called geniuses if they deliver the FA Cup. I don't think they would. I think for a lot of people, too much water's gone under the bridge to just turn it like that.
Yeah, that 25% or the 28% in the survey. But and they're always, you know, and I'm sorry, but I include Nigel and John in that 28%.
I admit to it. Don't worry about apologising. I admit to it.
Yeah. I don't think they could ever do anything in your two eyes. I think George is a little bit more on the fence, right? Well, and he's intelligent enough to decipher himself.
Oh dear. Moving swiftly on.
Yeah.
We have a West Ham Finance and London Stadium update. How exciting. After talking about polls and percentages, we now move on to
Biden. Well, I'm going to only give you a few figures because I could give you a lot more. But I was asked actually by the New Zealand Hammers how much money we're likely to make for last season, because the accounts don't get released to January. So I did a quick calculation, right, and talked to some sources. We're going to get up to about £200 million turnover. We'll get £122 million for the TV. That's already been said. We were going to get £12 million more for ticket sales. So we're going to get about 40 million from ticket sales at the London Stadium for the first season. And then we get sponsorship, retail, you know, merchandising, everything else, which adds another 30 million. So we're going to have the biggest turnover we've ever had. Well, our wages have gone up, but only to about 95 million, right? And other costs, you know, paying the 2.5 million, paying the agent fees, by the way, 9.5 million, and other costs like marketing, etc. By my estimations, we're going to make a gross profit of 80 million. Now, when you take player, that's before player trading. When you take player trading, which will probably take around about 30 million away from that, because we spent about a net fee of 30 million last summer, not this summer, last summer, that means it's about 50 million. However, the sources close to the club say, while they might be making a massive profit that will be announced soon, they are actually cash poor. And the reason they explain this is that they write off these assets. You know, the money they spent on the stadium, the money they gave towards the transformation, the money and they play, they write them down over, well, in the stadium, 99 years, the fit out the shop, 10 years, and the players up to 5 years on the length of their contract, but they pay it a lot quicker, and therefore they've never got any cash. So it will look from the outside, the club is tremendous, will make a massive profit, 50 million, I reckon. But it hasn't got any cash, and it continues to borrow against the training grounds, the shop leases, the London Stadium, because at the end of the day, it hasn't got any cash in the bank.
So what? How much was the they contribute? They paid 15 million to the transformation, didn't they?
Yeah, 15 million.
And how much did the shop cost? 10.
The shop, the office fit out, and the West Ham vacation cost another 10. And they,
so that's 25 million.
And they paid another 15 million to pay off their bank debts.
Well, they didn't really, did they?
They did.
They basically loaned it and they paid themselves back, didn't they? Basically, they borrowed the money from themselves to pay off the bank debt and then
No. There was an existing bank debt to the Icelandics, and that's the 15 million.
All right, so that's 25 million, 15, that's 30, that's 40 million.
Yeah.
So they've spent they borrowed 40 million. They're going to make 50 million. So they've got a 10 million profit this year. Then, no,
because it's you've got to work out, and it is complicated. But the cash flow, you know, what do they say? Turnover is for vanity, profit is for sanity, but cash is reality. And the problem is, we don't have enough cash for our ambitions and everything else. Just, I mean, everybody will say, oh, yeah, you sold Pyatt, you sold the bowling ground, you must have had money left. But even last season, I've worked out the net cost, we were 16 million short of cash last summer. We had to get that cash from somewhere. Where did we get it? We borrow it. We pay interest on that. Because even with selling Pyatt, even with selling Tompkins, even with selling the bowling ground for 38 million, we still didn't have enough of cash. You know, everybody wants these players to come in, but you've got to pay 50% up front. The cash has got to come from somewhere. Rightly or wrongly, David Sullivan and David Gold don't put cash in anymore. They injected £50 million of cash to begin with, and they're earning handsome interest on it. But they're not putting any cash anymore because they want the club to stand on its own 2 feet.
So they've sold the bowling and they're still skint, basically.
In cash terms, yeah.
Yeah, well done.
Good efforts, isn't it? But I mean, so in real terms, then next season when they make 100 million profit, if we stay up because everything goes up, so now next season we should be well rich, shouldn't we?
Yeah, Well, we should be able to build up a cash reserve that we can use. So with a lean year, so if we don't spend too much in January, we should be able to start building up some cash reserve.
Well, they ain't spending anything this year. What's their net spend this
year? So in the one that just went was about 19 million. I did something earlier. I tweeted out. I've got a bit of grief out of it. Since Sullivan Gold took over in January 2010, they've spent 263.5 million in transfer or loan fees for incoming players. In return, they've received 103.4 million, right? Selling players in the same period. And they paid 37.6 million in agents fees. So the net spend over those 7.5 years is 197 million, nearly 108. Well, actually, when you divide it...
107?
197 million is a net spend over 8 seasons. So that's about £25 million a year. And net spend, consistently, over the last 8 years, while they've been in charge, is about £25 million net spend.
And do you know what that highlights? I told you earlier.
They are rubbish. That's what it means.
Yeah, the rubbish players that they buy. The reason
they
why,
are rubbish, aren't they?
The reason why we're not a selling club anymore, as some people have pointed out as a good point for the owners, is because we buy shit that we can't sell. And no other club wants to buy. And the funny thing is that the two of the best players we've had in the last decade, probably Scott Parker and Payet, have left the club, sold to better clubs. So,
better clubs, Marseille, better club.
Well, if you take Marseille's record in France of winning titles, winning the Champions League, are you telling me they're not a better club than us? What are you judging a club by? Money or what trophies they put on the table? Because when I judge people, I want to see
their social media reach, obviously.
Their polls.
Yeah, their polls. Yeah, well, I don't know if they've bought any polls.
Anyway, just to finish off on London Stadium. Because the story that keeps on giving gets worse. The London Legacy Development Corporation are still in trouble. This week, they're about to meet their finance committee. They need another £21 million injecting from the taxpayer into E20, that owns the stadium, just to keep it afloat this financial year. I mean, at what point does it end? They spent another £4.5 million.
I don't know. I'm asking myself that same question.
I like to see Newham Council put their share in.
Well, Newham Council won't.
For the residents of Newham.
I don't know what the end game is beyond that West Ham should manage the stadium and maybe, which would mean obviously the current operators being moved out and maybe the London Mayor taking it over directly and taking it away from E20 and the London and maybe folding the London Legacy Corporation.
But that won't change it, will it? Crazy. What does that do for the fans? Quickly.
What does it do for the fans?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, that's
except,
what
we're except West Ham then manage their own affairs. They manage the stewarding. They manage the stadium so for other events and they know what they're doing. No.
Will the gaps be gone?
No.
All right, so we'll just have a different colour carpet.
Different colour carpet and probably slightly higher quality popcorn.
Oh.
But how can that stadium ever make money with the rental deal we've got with that?
Well, if we ran it, right? So if we ran it, we could, I mean, obviously we would get it for free, right? Our rental, but in return, we could actually stop it being loss-making to neutral. And that's really what they want. They don't want, the stadium is a draw for the area. Right, but if we ran it,
do you know how they could instantly save money straight away? Yeah, you know, in the summer when they put the seats back for the athletics,
yeah,
leave them back.
Really?
Yeah, because then, they won't need to move them for the concerts. They won't need to move them. Athletics can still participate as the stadium was built. West Ham will still be playing in an athletic stadium. Just the people that sit downstairs will be 30 yards.
Oh, are you saying that because you're in the upper level and it wouldn't make any difference?
They'd still have a better view than me, wouldn't they? Because I'm on the upper tier. So actually, when you talk about a multifunctional stadium, you just keep going on about the seats moving backwards and forwards. There's one way to stop it. Stop moving the seats. You save yourself £10 million.
Right, funny you should say that because next year, So costs were 12 million, by the way, to move them over the summer because it was the World Championships. It's 8 million usual, and they said they're going to half it to 4 million. How are they going to do that? The East Stand is never going to move again. It's going to stay where it is. They just take the first seven rows off. The North and...
But they did that in the summer, and it still cost 12 million.
No, it didn't. They moved it back in the summer. They had to move it for the World. The one before, they didn't. The North and South Stands, they're also going to just take the first few rows off. So the only stand they're going to move in future years is the West Stand, the one we're in.
Nice.
There you go.
Thanks. So there's a SAB meeting on Wednesday, followed by a bloggers meeting on the 28th of November. Did we know that?
We did.
Yeah.
I have.
Now the listeners do. What have you got to say about that, Sean?
Well, I have been invited to both. So if there's any points you want me to bring up with the club, this Wednesday I'm going to the Supporters Advisory Board. And on the 28th of November, the bloggers are all meeting with Miss Brady again. So that will be a joyous affair, won't it?
Oh, how the bloggers!
Independent bloggers.
What are you saying, John?
It's time for it's time for this. It's Facebook Twitter question time on our Facebook page, facebook.com/morethanjustapodcast. Nigel, you put on the group earlier, the boys are back in town tonight with an in-depth discussion about the past week's West Ham activities. What do you lot think about Moyes? Should the owners and Brady stop communicating with the fans, either directly or indirectly? How will history treat Slav's reign? Let's have a look. Alex McFarlane came in first and said, hello lads, if our board could learn to display more class, learn to keep their own counsel, stop with the rants and comments, I think we'd all appreciate that. That type of behaviour embarrasses the club.
Agree.
Ed Hawthorne says, I think it all comes down to player motivation. I keep hearing we are too good of a squad to go down. As a Hammers supporter from the States, the same was said about the US national team and the World Cup, and they didn't even qualify. Our squad needs to want to put the yards in to grind out results and hold on to leads in the final 10 minutes. Lewis Ehrentraut says, I expect a massive reaction on Sunday. Fitness for starters. Not sure on Billy McKinley on the coaching team, and Alan Irvine was a dog shite manager, but I'll reserve my judgment until we see them play.
Are we playing on Sunday? I thought we were playing on Saturday.
Playing no? Sunday.
We're playing Watford Sunday.
Oh. Day before my birthday.
You're going, aren't you?
I am going, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Lewis also predicts we'll have Jolyon Lescott before long.
Oh, God. He said Nick Harvey says not Jolyon Lego.
He did say Jolyon Legohead, yeah. Nick Harvey says, not a fan of Moyes as stated last week. However, the change was long overdue. He will undoubtedly add some organisation, which can only be beneficial. Don't expect it to be pretty, but we should see some improvement. Is he the man to take it to the next level? Absolutely not. He thinks that the owners and Lady Arsenal should definitely stop communicating with the fans.
Lady Arsenal. She says on her own blog, she says, I'm not an Arsenal fan.
Once a gooner, always a gooner.
Hector Durchie says, what kind of lineup do we expect versus Watford? Will he play 4-4-2? Who will likely to come in from the cold? Well, who knows? I've got no idea. Will he start Tony Martinez? Will he throw a curveball in like that?
Start Andy Carroll and maybe Sacco. I think Chicharito. I haven't heard anything more, but I assume he's picked up a little hamstring from the way he pulled up. Club have been very quiet on that, so I only consume the worst.
Okay, that leads us on nicely to predictions then. What do we predict for Sunday's game at Watford? John, let's start with you.
I would hope for an inspirational 1-0 victory.
Nigel?
Yeah, I'll go 2-0.
Sean?
I think I'll go 3-0.
I'll go 4-0 then, shall I? Only seems right.
Yeah.
Cool. That's it. We're done.
International break special.
international break special. We'll be back next week after, let's hope, our first 3 points under David Moyes.
Yeah. Come on, Moisey's
Clarence Blue Army. Come on, Moisey! Moisey's Clarence Blue Army.
Oh, no, you can't go sing on, that Nige. First game. You can't sing
last,
that first
last
game.
Comment. Go on.
I'll tell you later. Don't worry. Go on.
That's it for Wanderers Podcast. Thanks for listening. Come on, you Irons.
Come on, you
Irons.
Come
on, you Iron.
Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast. Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast. Shit, man.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.